Most important series I do with you while I'm with you. I'm calling it the Jesus lifestyle. And in short, it's Jesus' invitation to live and operate with him in the way that he would want us to live with him, rather than seeing it like, Jesus, I give you my devotional time. There's this Western mindset we have to address, right? So we'll take a look at the Jesus lifestyle, how to live like Jesus, be like Jesus, and do like Jesus. So today is on intoxicating joy. Well, deep in the heart of everyone here, deep in our heart, is a longing for joy. It's a rotisserie of a longing. It's always there. We long for joy. And here's the truth about it. It's a good longing. God created this longing. But sometimes there are things that happen in our life that choke that joy or knock the stuffing out of it. And there's a joyless life, right? And I believe that God's joy in our soul, we can soar with him, but without it, we get very sour without him. This is why Nehemiah, in the middle of the intense testing of rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem, what did he say? The joy of the Lord is my strength. And so we've got to come to terms with this joy. But sometimes we get hit so hard by life that our joy is snail-paced after God rather than a gazelle-like pace after God. And Ellen and I faced that back in 1991. We were getting ready for grad school. And so my theology on joy was about to get an upgrade. I had to go through a deconstruction of my understanding of what true joy is. And so we left for grad school. Ellen was going to get her master's. I was going to get my master's of divinity. But we didn't realize we were going to enter a different classroom. God had plans for us to enter. First, the context. We were leaving our childhood home. We were leaving the home church, our friends and family. It was saying goodbye to all them. That was very Abrahamic, right? It's like, wow. And so that was a big part of it. Well, the day came for us to move. The U-Haul that we rented out, they had rented out to someone else. It's like, great. So I went to Ryder. It was $100 more. Our Pontiac T1000, a little matchbox car, by the way, just little thing, kicked the bucket that day. The day we moved, it was the hottest day on record. Our friends were dropping like flies. And so Ellen and I, at night, we went swimming. And then, you know, we went to bed, got up at 4 a.m. to beat the heat. And so Ellen took the wet bathing suit and used kitty litter and said to Dad, give these to Pete, throw this out. He got them mixed up. Took the used kitty litter, opened up the Ryder truck at 4 in the morning, went, and I heard this. Not good. Opened that door later, the smell was putrid. It was so bad. Our helpers that day were not there. We had to do it ourselves. I got heat exhaustion. I played 8 years of football. I never got heat exhaustion. Our AC unit that day broke down, just completely kaput. Ellen went to cook our first meal. The vent exploded, literally exploded. And there was smoke in the kitchen. I was like, honey, what are you cooking in here, man? It was crazy. Where we lived, there were multiple prisons down the street. A prisoner had escaped, and we heard gunshots. We moved from New York. We were getting away from that, and here we were in the middle of it. The financial aid that we had hoped to get for school, because both of us were getting our master's, we got no financial help at all, which was very hard for us. We were both very sick during this period, more sick than we had ever been in our life at that time. We didn't have boils like Job, but it was bad. For me, I know you don't get this, some of you, but my pet cat died. It was like, what else is going to happen? Well, Ellen was a teacher and down there, and she was introduced as, this is Ellen, to her staff, and this is in South Carolina. This is Ellen. She's a Yankee. Ellen, could you tell us about the War of the Northern Aggression? She came home and said, honey, what's the War of Northern Aggression? I go, oh, that's the Civil War. Some people are still in that mindset. By law, she was supposed to have 31 students. As a resource teacher, she had 47. They were breaking the law. We talked to lawyers about it. There were a lot of things that we said, okay, we will not pursue. In seminary, I was loving it, but I'll be honest with you, I was dealing with an inferiority complex. I'm amongst all these giants of faith. What am I doing here? As a result of this, our marriage was in conflict. We were arguing often. Life seemed against us. We felt alone. My prayer life with God was sinking fast. It was filled with grief, frustration. It was a Sahara, very little joy. And my prayer journal was filled with all kinds of things that no one else can read. And for the first time in my life at 24, I actually expressed my anger at God. I had never done this before. And I pounded after seminary day. I pounded the car, said, "What are you doing to me?" It's not pretty. Not a fine moment with God. It was at that low point for me, the bottom of the barrel, that God began to address my theology on joy. And he used three resources. The book of Psalms, the writings of C.S. Lewis on joy, and John Piper as a pastor and leader and writer, specifically his book, Desiring God. It was this verse that got my attention in Psalm 16. We're going to read it, but it was verse 11 that hit me. You can turn there now to Psalm 16. But the passage, at least the verse 11, says, "You've made known to me the path of life, and you will fill me with joy in your presence and eternal pleasures at your right hand." Another translation says, "In your presence is fullness of joy." In your presence is fullness of joy. So let's read the whole psalm. Psalm 16. David starts here by saying, "Keep me safe, my God, for in you I take refuge. I say to the Lord, you are my Lord. Apart from you, I have no good thing. I say of the holy people who are in the land, they are the noble ones in whom is all my delight. Those who run after other gods will suffer more and more. I will not pour out libations of blood to such gods or take up their names on my lips. Lord, you alone are my portion and my cup. You make my lot secure. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Surely I have a delightful inheritance. I will praise the Lord who counsels me. Even at night my heart instructs me. I keep my eyes always on the Lord. With him at my right hand I will not be shaken. Therefore my heart is glad and my tongue rejoices. My body also will rest secure because you will not abandon me to the realm of the dead, nor will you let your faithful one see decay. You've made known to me the path of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your right hand." I wanted to get back on this path of life because it seemed very elusive to me at the time. I felt like I was in a cul-de-sac of broken dreams. And so I wanted to get to this fullness of joy because it seemed so elusive to me. It was like I was looking for a four-leaf clover. I could not find the joy. And so the writings of David started to elevate me from the kindergarten level of understanding of what real joy is. And so I came because of John Piper, one of my heroes of the faith, and I will always be thankful for him. And out of his teachings, I got ultimate joy comes in God, not from God. Ultimate joy comes from his manifest presence, not his manifold presence as in gifts. Ultimate joy comes in God, not from him. It comes from his manifest presence, not his manifold presence as in gifts. And so as I began to study this and look at this, I realized every century, every generation, there's a human quest, right, for joy. We're all on it. Everyone. Pascal said this, "All men seek happiness. This is without exception. Whatever different means they employ, they all tend to this end. This is the motive of every action of every man." So what I want to do is just walk through the psalm. because to me, David is a man of joy. He captured something for us that he passed down through his writings. And so let's just walk through this. The first thing David is showing us is the plan God has for joy. There's a plan he has. David starts this psalm with a foundational truth, Psalm 16:2. Apart from you, I have no good thing. So everything in my life, God, that I have, you are the hand behind it, right? And that's why every day you can give thanks, because every good thing that I have, he's behind it. Now, behind every good thing in the plan of joy is he plans out our joy. He plans it. So when I do marriage and premarital counseling, I go, do you understand that God has brought two stories and now he's making it one? Because he's the author of joy in your life. He's thrilled at this occasion because it brings him joy when he's bringing joy to you. So David sought to walk in this plan as he understood the foundation. So from the very beginning of his call, remember he was about 16 years old when Samuel called him, you're going to be king. That's a horse-sized pill to swallow. You're going to be king. And the only way you could be king is on the strength of God's joy. And so David was one prepared by God to do that. This is where he wrote his Psalms as a teenager, as an older adult, in the wild as he was a shepherd. And so it's in that place we begin to understand. And as I looked at David's writings, I saw he understood there's a plan that God has for our joy. But he saw it this way. There's a joy from God. It's his hand, what he gives us in the goodness. It's joy with God in the work that we do with him. But then the greatest is the joy that's in the person of God that's unchanging. Work with God can change. Good things from, right, you're all, apart from you, I have no good thing. It's all you, Lord, but that changes. For us in 1991, those first two were a bare minimum. It was low. And it was hard. And so David says this in Psalm 145, you open your hand and satisfy the desires of every living thing. And so open our eyes, we can see in our culture, they're benefiting from the joy from God. I saw it this week, my daughter sent me a video. It was a New Zealand women's rugby team walked up to King Charles and they said, sir, can we give you a hug? And he said, excuse me? He said, can we give you a hug? And he goes, sure. And all the girls ran up and hugged him. And they're all laughing. And he's laughing. You know, they're kind of a social barrier that they just, they went. And I just started laughing that this world is filled with joy from God. You have it. I have it. David said, apart from you, I have no good thing. What about you? For me, animals bring me joy. Right? Kids? Animals. I've had cats for almost 58 years. I love cats. Black bears. Puppies in your lap. You ever remember that commercial when the kid was in Pepsi and he had eight puppies trying to lick his face? Remember that old one in the 70s? I always wanted to be that kid. Nature. I was just in Yellowstone last week with my daughter. We were giddy, laughing, joy. Recreation, isn't it true? Watching our kids play sports, we're so proud of them, so joy when they do the right thing. Music, I think Hans Zimmer is a brilliant composer today. His music brings me joy. Boyhood dream of mine was always to own my own pinball machine. And Ellen bought one when I turned 40. What are you getting me for when I turn 60, honey? Every good thing, David said, comes from the hand of God. God enjoys giving it to us. David said this, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. So David understood he owns it, he operates it, and within it there's joy. He gives us joy. But here's what he said. Listen, David saw the whole life under the plan of God. Even death could not snuff out the joy. Verse 9. Therefore, my heart is glad and my tongue rejoices. My body will also rest secure because you will not abandon me to the grave. David found joy in knowing that no matter what happens to this thing, God will not abandon me. And so, Rick, when you were praying for Connie I was just thinking about this verse for her, right? As you battle, the joy is knowing he has a plan. The second is the people of joy. David moves from the plan to the people. He said, as for the saints who are in the land, they are the glorious ones whom is all my delight. David is looking at the map of Israel, right? East, or east, west, north, south, young and old, right? Seasoned and wet behind the ears. The real green people who are very green in their understanding to those that are the leaders of his nation. And he's saying, I delight in them. When you look for your next pastor, make sure he knows how to delight in you. This is David. They are people I delight in. Once we lose this delight in people, we lose motivation for work, life, and family. We had lost a lot of that in 1991. There's a joy in people we can find again. There's a joy in people that people's leadership will go to another level because they find something in them. Learn. There's a joy from growing together with the people of God. So the expression that you're going to hear a lot in the culture is find your tribe. And what that means is find people that have a common mindset and common commitment to what you like. So for us, it's climbing mountains. And when we reach the top, there's conversations of joy up there with everybody we've talked with over the years. For parents, it's soccer season. Moms and dads, that sideline is a sideline of joy. I remember going to see Paul and Megan Maurer at their softball game with their kids. I said, Paul, where's Megan? Oh, she's talking to moms and hugging them. I go, exactly. People delight in mothers and fathers. This is what David found. But how did he find it? How did he arrive at this place of a delightful conclusion? First, he saw their true identity. He called them saints. So sometimes people don't see themselves as that person, but David said they're saints. He saw them for what they truly were and could be. See people that way rather than just the problems. He wasn't glossing over. He just recognized they were saints. Do we see people the same way? Do we see the wonderful image of God in teenagers who struggle over sexual identity? Do we still see the image of God in them? Look for it. It's still there. The way I do that is I go, it's their longing. They're longing for acceptance. Not to accept what they're doing, but accept the longing, I accept you, the person. So we have to find that. Awana workers, I was here watching these kids smile. Every kid came in here smiling just about. Why? Friendship, play, learning. That atmosphere is contagious, isn't it? The people of God, the children. The older I get, the more I want to spend time with kids. It's contagious, right? This is what David is saying. I find joy in the people. But here's what I think we miss sometimes. This is where C.S. Lewis helped me, is that sometimes we don't capture the fullness of the joy that we have together because we don't see what each person brings to the table. If we saw what they bring to the table, then we would have more joy and delight in them. C.S. Lewis said this to me, and it clicked for me. He said this, in each of my friends, there is something that only one other friend can fully bring out. By myself, I am not large enough to call the whole man into activity. I want other lights than my own to show all his facets. Hence, true friendship is the least jealous of loves. Two friends delight to be joined by the third, and the third by the fourth, if only the newcomer is qualified to become a real friend. Sometimes they're not. But if they are, they can, as the blessed souls say in Dante, here comes one who will augment our love. For in this love, to divide is not to take away. That's why I thought your announcement about the women's retreat was so spot on. The young and the old together, we bring out the best in each other. We need each other. There's some things that you do for me that you don't do for me. We need each other. That's what David saw. He said the people of God brought him delight. I imagine when he wrote 2 Samuel 23 of his mighty men, the 33 mighty men, I'm sure he was writing that with great joy. The exploits we did together. David caught that. Then there's the place of joy. Thirdly, the place of joy. Listen to his words. Lord, you have assigned me my portion and my cup. You have made my lot secure. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Surely I have a delightful inheritance. David could look out his window and walk the land and go, this is a good place. Listen to the progression. You have assigned, God appointed, right? My portion, my cup, my light, my lot. And the result of that was, it's pleasant. It's delightful. Sometimes I wonder if we really saw where we were, where we probably would capture things we're missing about the beauty. I think Perry County is gorgeous. I think it's gorgeous here. And so David saw this, and he found delight in this. I'm reminded of a line, and it's Bug's Life in Disney, one of the earliest Disney Pixar. And if you know the story, there are a bunch of ants that live on an island, right? And they're being dominated and controlled by grasshoppers. And so the queen is trying to train her daughter, the future queen, to see the good that they have. And she says this line, and Ellen and I both laugh because we thought it was clever, but it was the way that she said it. Because the daughter-to-be queen was just not seeing what was delightful about the place. And she said, listen, honey, it's not a lot in life, but it's our lot in life. It's a clever statement, but she was capturing something for her to see. And so I saw this in my brother and sister, my sister and brother-in-law, who I was just with, who planted the church. And after the first year when they planted the church, this is what I said to them. In talking with you over these last few days, if this church plant doesn't work out, I see you guys staying here. You know why? It's the way that you talk about the people. It's the way you talk about Montana. It's the way that you, it's in your soul. It's in your soul. David had the land in his soul. This is the part I want you to capture, and this is the person of joy. Remember, David saw there's joy from God, there's joy with God in his work, but there's the joy in God. I didn't get this experientially. I got it intellectually back in 1991. But again, David said, you have made known to me the path of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your right hand. This is the third tier of joy that David is pointing to. It is the pathway sometimes God uses is to show us, I've given joy from my hand to you. Now come closer. I want to work with you to bring joy. So when you work with children, there's a joy there, right? But then there's a joy in me I want you to find, David, and I want us to find. What happens sometimes is when we get involved in the work can be very amazing and joyful. But sometimes God does things to say, don't forget, get back to the most important. I see this in scripture with Jesus. The disciples come back after he sent them out and they said, Jesus, even the demons believe and are cast out. And he goes, don't rejoice that they obey you. Rejoice that your names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Do you see the shift? It's okay to rejoice, but let's get to the real place of rejoicing. Rejoice that your names are written. Get back to who you are, who you are, who you are. Remember, ultimate joy comes in God, not from God. It comes from his manifest presence, not his manifold presence, his gifts. There's a difference between the general presence of God and the manifest presence, right? David said, It's fullness of joy. God's not just giving joy, he's actually giving himself. So when Nehemiah said, the joy of the Lord is our strength, when God gives himself, we have supernatural strength. We have his strength. David said in Psalm 21:6, surely you have granted him eternal blessings and made him glad with joy in your presence. It's almost as if David is saying, I'm glad that I get to have joy in your presence. And so this is where we have to ask the question, what is the role of praise when it comes to worship? Here's what happened to me in 1991. God allowed those first two tiers of joy to be removed. And the basis of my praise was based primarily on those two, not the third. Do you understand? When those two, from God and with God, are diminished, my praise was based primarily on those. And when it came to the person of God, sure, I had to work through my angst or misunderstanding or not really seeing what God wanted to teach me. And so I began to see, wait a minute, Lord, you're the source of all joy, you give all joy, but you are joy. And so I went after this. Because when we question God's plan of joy, we can get discouraged. When we do not like the place of joy, we escape to ponder greener pastures, which was what Shayla and I were doing. When we struggled with the people of joy, we felt they were unfriendly and we felt alone. David said, when praise is based on the character of God, we reach a new level of the fullness of joy in God. And so this is where C.S. Lewis helped me understand the role of praise when it comes to praising God. Listen to what he said. But the most obvious fact about praise, whether of God or anything, strangely escaped me. I thought of it in terms of compliment, approval, or the giving of honor. That's how I saw worship back then. Compliment, approval, giving honor. I had never noticed that all enjoyment spontaneously overflows into praise. So when you enjoy God for who he is, unless shyness or the fear of boring others is deliberately brought into check. He said, the world rings with praise. Lovers praising their spouse, readers their favorite poet, walkers praising the countryside, players praising their favorite game, praise of weather and wines and dishes and actors, motors and horses and colleges, countries and children and flowers and mountains. And this is how he ends it. He says this, I had not noticed that I think we delight to praise what we enjoy, because the praise not merely expresses, but completes the enjoyment. God, you are glorious and good and joyful. Imagine not being able to say that. It's not complete, right? So praise gives us a chance to express what we see and believe and know that he is good and he's full of joy. Jesus brought me to another level when I began to study this. Listen to what Jesus said. John 15:9-12. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. If you obey my commands, you will remain in my love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. Catch that? Those two. My joy may be in you and that your joy is complete. Here's the beauty of this promise. When we love and obey God, his heart wells up with joy and he wants us to taste that joy he has for us. The Lord really brought this to another level with me when Josh, my son, was about 4 or 5 years old, and Ellen was in the backyard with Alicia, and I was doing one of my chores that is my least favorite. I've been doing dishes for 35 years. You just kind of go into this zone of just do it, you know, just do it. I was doing dishes, but I needed a little help, so I put some music on. I said, Josh, how about some music? Yeah, Dad. So I put in one of his favorite songs. It was kind of wild and da-da-da-da, all this, and all of a sudden this thought passed my mind. Dance with your son. never did that before. My parents never did that with me that I could. Well, no, Mom did that. Mom did that. Thank you, Mom. I picked them up, and we started to dance, and we were laughing. And then a sweet, gentle song came on next, and then he laid his head on my shoulder, and I went, wow, this is pretty intimate. I put him down. He felt like he kind of felt like a rag doll on the ground. Just laying there. And so I said, hey, bud, what's going on? What are you thinking? And here's what he said. I asked him, what are you thinking about? He said, Mommy. I said, dude, I'm not your mommy. But you know what I heard? We went somewhere in intimacy that I've been with Mom, but I'm not as familiar with you. You hear that? And so I knew I had to work on it because this is why I do soul care. My father left me when I was 4. So something was programmed in me. Protect myself. Don't be that close. Don't get too close. And as we do with God, we do the same with God. And Jesus said, but when you love and obey me, when it calls to sacrifice, like 3 weeks of a Daniel fast, and when you obey me, oh, I have so much joy for you. Jesus said, he's going to complete it. Now, by completing it, what he means is that it will not fade. It will not diminish. This is what heaven's going to be. You ever have joy and you go, I just don't want it to end? Jesus is saying, when we live in perfect obedience of love and obedience to him, we will live in perfect joy from him. Did you catch that? This is why we live in his presence. We seek this. David understood this. Allow me just to go a little bit longer than normal. He's just been a hero in my life. David loved the presence of God. You remember when he brought the Ark of the Covenant? Remember what he did in public? He danced, right? He was just so, he understood the difference God made for Israel on all facets, his justice, his righteousness, his truth. But it brought him so much joy, he could not contain himself. But what we forget is how much investment he made financially towards that as well. When you look at, it's a long passage, I'm only reading one verse, but it says here what lengths he went financially. When they brought the ark, it says, and so it was that when the bearers of the ark of the Lord had gone 6 paces, he sacrificed an oxen fatling. I did the math, okay? 6 paces to sacrifice 2 animals. It would take a man approximately 30,000 paces to cover the distance. That means they stopped more than 3,500 times. That's equivalent to 7,000 animals. I know, it's disgusting. It's a bloody mess, I know. We don't operate in that today, unless you're a farmer, right? David was serious about the presence of God. And this initiated the golden era of worship. And so, the joy of the Lord is our strength. And so when we base our life, the path of life God wants us on, and when we base praise on the first 2 levels of tier, from God, with God, it only goes so far in our praise, but when we base it on his presence, that he is a God of joy, we give him the glory, and he gives us his joy. And so when I was not in the joy of the Lord, watch this teddy bear become a grizzly bear. What was that? AI is talking back to me. Was that AI? Lastly, with this, there are perplexities of joy. True joy is not perplex, but our human experience makes this perplex. What do I mean by that? David says 2 things in this psalm that I would like to clarify. Notice he says, you've made known to me the path of life, and you will fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your right hand. But prior to that, he says this, the sorrows of those will increase who run after other gods. I will not pour out their libations of blood or take up their names on my lips. There were practices in the land of other gods that existed this sure seems to indicate this was more than just man worshiping a god, but these other sort of types of people that were gods that were pouring out libations of blood. And the libations was where you poured something out as a blood offering. It meant pretty gross. David saw that and saw the idols in the land, and it grieved him. What happens, Martin Luther said this, anything that gets between you and the Lord is an idol. And so sometimes our pursuit of joy can become an idol, right? When it's the first two tiers, right? Even these things can become idols. But when it comes to pleasure, David said, your right hand is eternal pleasures. There's a difference between joy and pleasure that we have to understand, or else we get caught in a trap. God gives them both, but they're different soul experiences. God brings both, right? And we see that with our spouses and our children and our friends and our church. But joy can be long-lasting. Pleasure is usually short-lived. Pleasure is centered on the body primarily, where joy is primarily centered on the relationship that's there. Joy is an emotional response that can be deep. Pleasure instead is fleeting. And joy is associated with some sense of high purpose and spiritual well-being. Pleasure is usually something lower than that. And this is where I've worked with couples over the years where in the sexual union, the focus of one might be on the pleasure at the expense of joy in the relationship. If you don't have joy in the relationship, then it's reduced to just pleasure. And this is where sometimes we have to bring those two together. And that takes work. With children, when it comes to joy and pleasure, I say, do you like sweet cereal? You know, like that. Oh, yeah. Makes me happy. I go, that's pleasure. It's like, ooh, yummy. But joy is when your mother goes, happy birthday, here's Fruit Loops or whatever, right? It's the joy knowing my mom's thinking of me, right? David wants that to be separated. And I say this to you, ladies and gentlemen, before I bring this to a close. The pursuit of pleasure at the expense of joy is killing America. And addictions are killing us as well. I need this Daniel fast. There are a couple of things I need to break when it comes to food. And I heard this story that when Eskimos want to hunt wolves in winter, they know that wolves love blood, but winter is hard to hunt. So instead of going to the wolves, they let the wolves come to them. And what they do is they freeze blood to a knife. The wolf will come and lick the blood off the knife, and before it know it, it's licking its own blood and eventually will kill itself. I have seen too many people die of addictions. But God offers an alternative. And David understood the value of joy. He followed the God's plan of joy. He understood his place that God appointed him. One of the things that Ellen and I admire about you guys is the length in which some of you have lived here. I thought that we would be that way, but he keeps moving us from place to place. And that's, we've been in State College for many years, but these interims. And so you know this place. And David found delight in people. I love watching Rick up here. He's so good at delighting in you. I mean, he's good up here. And I just go, that's a leader worth following. He finds delight in you. And so David understood this intoxicating power of God. So here's one thing I want you to do as you go home today, and I'll close. One word of application. Talk with each other about what's on your bucket list, honey? What's on your bucket list? And you'll discover what really brings the other partner joy. You might hear, honey, I'd like to have another kid. Who knows? That's between both of you. My point is, your bucket list will determine where you value joy. So I separate my ministry bucket list and my life bucket list. Those are separate. Why? Ministry requires a lot of sacrifice. Not that this one doesn't, but it's mostly about fun. It's about fun. And so I encourage you with that. When I've studied the life of John Hyde, he was an incredible man of prayer and a missionary to India. His writings have been with us for many years now. And some people thought he was too obsessed with God. They said this about A.B. Simpson too, our founder, a man obsessed with God. But a true story reveals the true spirit behind John Hyde's sacrificial prayer life. A lady once approached him after his message. She was not a Christian, she was a seeker. She asked, "Do you think, Mr. Hyde, that a lady who dances can go to heaven?" Mr. Hyde looked at her with a smile, said quietly and respectfully, "I do not see how a lady can go to heaven unless she dances." It's not the act of dancing as if dancing is the key to heaven. It's your life will show something with joy. And what he did was that he explained to her after that the joy of forgiveness, the joy of knowing God. And that's Psalm 32 with David. "I committed the worst sin with Bathsheba. I went after pleasure at the expense of my own wife and the nation of Israel. But God has forgiven me." And he knew the joy of forgiveness. And so back in 1991, our life took a turn back to what real joy is, because I looked to Jesus' promise where he says, "I'm going to complete it. There'll be no more leaks. It will be complete." Imagine living in sustained joy. That's why Teresa Avila gave me hope, because that's where she sought to live.